Welcome to Someone Believes in Me Workshop of the WCNA 31. My name is Megan, and I am an addict. Aloha. I don't have any announcements down here, so can we please open this meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer? God? Okay. Maggie has been asked to read What is the Narcotics Anonymous Program?
Good morning. My name is Maggie. I'm an addict in the Mid-Hudson area of New York. NA is a nonprofit fellowship or society of men and women for whom drugs have become a major problem. We are recovering addicts who meet regularly to help each other stay clean. This is a program of complete abstinence from all drugs. There is only one requirement for membership, the desire to stop using. We suggest that you keep an open mind and give yourself a break. Our program is a set of principles written so simply that we can follow them in our daily lives. The most important thing about them is that they work. There are no strings attached to NA. We are not affiliated with any other organizations. We have no initiation fees or dues, no pledges to sign, no promises to make to anyone. We are not connected with any political, religious, or law enforcement groups, and are under no surveillance at any time. Anyone may join us, regardless of age, race, sexual identity, creed, religion, or lack of religion. We are not interested in what or how much you used, who your connections were, what you have done in the past, how much or how little you have, but only in what you can do about your what you want to do about your problem and how we can help. The newcomer is the most important person at any meeting because we can only keep what we have by giving it away. We have learned from our group experience that those who keep coming to our meetings regularly stay clean.
Thank you, Maggie. And Patrick has been asked to read Why Are We Here?
Hello, my name is Patrick, and I'm from Corpus Christi, and I'm an addict. Why are we here? Before coming to the fellowship of NA, we could not manage our own lives. We could not live and enjoy life as other people do. We had to have something different, and we thought we had found it in drugs. We placed the use ahead of the welfare of our families, our wives, our husbands, and our children. We had to have drugs at all costs. We did many people great harm, but most of all, we harmed ourselves. Through our inability to accept personal responsibility, we were actually creating our own problems. We seemed to be incapable of facing life on its own terms. Most of us realized that in our addiction, we were slowly committing suicide. But addiction is such a cunning enemy of life that we had lost the power to do anything about it. Many of us had ended up in jail or sought help through medicine, religion, or psychiatry. None of these methods were sufficient for us. Our disease would always resurface or continue to progress until, in desperation, we sought help from each other in Narcotics Anonymous. After coming to NA, we realized we were sick people. We suffered from a disease in which there was no known cure. It can, however, be arrested, and some point of recovery is impossible.
At this time, I'd like to introduce our first speaker, Jimmy R. from Maryland.
I'm Jimmy R. I'm an addict. I'm clinging to the grace of my loving Father in heaven, grateful to the people of the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous who gave me a life, showed me how to live it. The 12 steps and 12 traditions allow me to carry along that spiritual path. That's something I never want to forget. Because for me, it was somebody who believes in me, and at the top of that list is God. Because at the end of my using, if you're a drug addict of my kind, I was in a fetal position asking God to just take me. I'm ready to go. You know? I use, just to touch a little bit for the newcomers, they're here, just to touch on a little bit, the way I used was, I used alcohol and heroin for over 30 years. And that's why I say thank God for crack. It got me here in 2 months. Man, when them crackheads get up at this mic and say, I don't smoke crack for 5 years, I go, oh, man. How in the world you smoke crack for 5 years? Man, that's the worst job I ever had. Man. You ever see a crackhead's shoes? You anything up is the top of the shoe. The rest is gone. Man. You know, but God allows them little light bulbs to go off in our head. And the light bulb went off in my head when I was sitting around the table passing the crack pipe. And it says, Jimmy, you finally arrived. You're now doing a drug you can't get enough of. That's the way it is, you know. And, I'd like to make this meeting sort of like a tribute to the people that really believed in me because, I always had that loving, caring God. You know, when I was in jail, you know, you get me out of this one and I'll never do it again type of thing, you know. But I started realizing through the old timers, the men and women that helped me get clean, I started learning, you know, about all the other people that believed in me, like my mother and father and friends, guys you work with. I mean, I terrorized my plant that I worked in. You know, I always say I retired from a plant through the grace of God and a powerful union. Because, you know, I should have been fired, you know, like every other drug, a million times. Can you believe I had a job that had unlimited sick leave? So I didn't work for 6 summers. Then the last time, you know, that little box on the form you got to fill out, it says, why are you out? Well, I filled it out when I was in a drunken stupor, and I put on there, broken eyelash. This woman went to the two guys and said, hey, Jimmy R's been out for 3 weeks. What's he out for now? Broken eyelash. So she went to the plant manager. She said, you know Jimmy R? He goes, yeah, I know him. What do you do now? He said, well, he's been out on sick leave for 3 weeks with a broken eyelash. The secretary fell right out of the chair. She thought that was the funniest thing she ever heard. Years later, she used to walk by me and go, she didn't know any addicts, you know. But you know what? Stuff starts to happen in your life, you know, and like I said, these light bulbs start going off where you have to have a change. And I visited my partner in prison, right? And I'm sitting across from him, and he says, how come me and you done all the same things and I've been in here for 22 years and you've been out there? And I looked at him and I said, every time we robbed somebody, I went home and got on my knees and I said, God, forgive me. And I meant it. I said, every time we beat somebody up, I went home and got on my knees and I said, God, forgive me. And he looked at me and he said, you know what, man, that's the difference in me and you. I abandoned God a long time ago. But through the program of Narcotics Anonymous, he found him over 6 years ago. He's sitting in that front row. See, he believed in me, and he believed he owed me, and he came in these rooms, and like he says, he sat in his seat one day too long. That's what happened to me. Yeah? And what happened to happen is what this fellowship is all about. And I think a lot of times in the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous, we take too lightly what is our bloodline, and that is the 12 steps. And you know what? The first 2 years in here, I'm going to sum up what Jimmy's life was like. I got here in March of 1987, and from March of 1987 to March of 1989, here's my story. Nailed, jail, bailed, and a couple of ODs. See, because when I got out of treatment, they told me, you got to go to a meeting every day. You got to throw yourself into this. You know? Well, I got out of the rehab with all the best intentions in the world. How about addicts with best intentions? That's why. Remember when you woke up at 10 o'clock in the morning and said, I'm not using today. By 10:30, you couldn't even stand up. That was me. You know, and what happened was, I called this woman up, who luckily at that time had a lot of years, and I was you know, I was using up the quarter liquor and a day, and I was eating a bag of heroin because I could no longer get the needle on my arm, and I couldn't get the straw on my nose. That's another one of those, the light bulbs going off. You're 41 years old, and before you go to work, you got to snort your rug. Oh, that ain't it. What? Yeah. That's how I started my day, eating a bag of heroin. Anybody ever eat a bag of heroin? It ain't the breakfast of champions, I can say that right now. So anyway, I got out of treatment, my meeting slowed down, they stopped, and I picked up. And I can remember like it was yesterday, I was out there mowing my lawn, best intentions in the world, staying clean, and this girl pulled up in front of my house with a convertible, and she had them hot pants on. She had that six-pack of beer with the moisture running down it, and she opened her hand up, and she had a bag of heroin. Now, I don't know about anybody else, but that meets all my needs, so I was gone, you know? The only thing I can remember was looking back and seeing a lawnmower going like this, and I was, we got to go, yeah. And what happened was, she said to me that morning, early in the morning, she said, Jimmy, I believe you want this thing, but what you got to do is, you got to get a home group. You got to get a sponsor. You got to get a job in a home group, and you have to work the 12 steps. Bingo. About an hour later, I called the man 5 o'clock in the morning and asked him to be my sponsor. And he didn't say to me, are you out of your mind calling me 5 o'clock in the morning? He said this, if you cannot use today, I'll take you to a meeting tonight, and I'm going to put you in on the first step. Ladies and gentlemen, they were the words that launched me through the archway to freedom. I've never found it necessary to use a mind or mood-altering drug since that day. See, because now I have a map, I have direction. And I looked at the first step and it talked about unmanageability. Man, my life was, you know what? I was so crazy that my wife had all these checkbooks, you know? And she was on like check 6, and I went and cashed check 699. I thought they had to use all them checks before she would get that again. The end of that month, that check come in. She said, oh, I got 6, 7, 8, and 699. I mean, that's how out of touch with the world I was, man. So I started learning what unmanageability is in all areas of my life. And see, here's the key about unmanageability. When I sponsor my sponsees, I got to make them understand unmanageability in all areas of your life. It ain't just putting down the dope. Alcoholics Anonymous says we're powerless over alcohol. Gamblers Anonymous says we're powerless over gambling. OA's powerless over eating. We're powerless over everything. That's why it says addiction. I belong in AA, GA, OA, AAA. I belong in all, man. I'm an addict to the bone, man. I had a sponsee come up to me and he said, I just got a credit card. I said, oh, no. I said, what did you set the limit at? He said, $2,000. I said, well, that's all right. A month later, outside of a meeting, he come up and said, hey, brother, can I get $20? I said, take that card down to the machine and get $20. He said, oh, I can't. I'm over my limit. I said, man, your limit was $2,000. I said, what did you buy for $2,000? He said, I bought $2,000 worth of Craftsman tools. I said, man, you ain't even a mechanic. Huh? Man. See, and them old-timers told me the first split in the road comes between the first and second step. You can get a good idea right there. Because a person that understands unmanageability is going to plug into a power greater than himself. The other ones are going to go a little bit farther down the book where it says doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. See, my sponsor early on only made one mistake with me. He said, you need to make women friends. I said, I've been waiting for this. This redhead came through the door and I said, I'm going to make her my friend. 2 weeks later, she was banging on my window and I opened them curtains up. She said those words us men love to hear. We need to talk. So I shut them curtains and I got on my knees. And I said, God, if you remove her from my life, I will never ask you for another thing. Watch what you pray for. You just might get it. And here's the good thing of that, why God had me in that relationship. I sponsor a son. He's got 11 years clean. He's getting ready to have 12 years when I get home. He's a great father. He works every day. And he's got 3 children he takes care of. That's wild. That's another thing with us. How about that work? I love that when a guy comes up to me and he goes, hey, can you give me a job? I say, well, wait a minute, let me get this straight. You want to make about $100,000 a year, you want to work about 20 hours a week, and you want to tell everybody what to do. I say, when I find that job, I'm going to keep it. So in the third step is when I started changing my fears to faith. My sponsor had me break down the serenity prayer. How about that? The wisdom to know the difference. Here, Jimmy, eat these, okay. Here, Jimmy, shoot this, okay. Here, Jimmy, smoke this, okay. The wisdom to know the difference. Knows the sentence. And I learned that in the serenity prayer from people that believed in me and thought I could change, that I could make it, you know. And I got into the fourth step, and the first thing he had me do was break down the 7 deadly sins. Pride, lust. I'm prideful in my pride, lustful in my lust. I got a beautiful wife and a beautiful girlfriend. You don't get to. That's why I don't have any. See, I had learned all that in that 4-step. I had learned my patterns. Guess who became my teachers? All of you. You became my teacher. Because I still like women that dance on tables. But I always end up under the table. You know? So what happened was, in the 4th step, I learned my patterns. In the 5th step, from my patterns, I learned the exact nature of my wrongs. My sponsees come up and tell me I'm going to rob that bank. I say, go ahead if you're willing to pay the consequences. It's as simple as that. In the 6th step, I learned what my character defects was, my thought process. You know, Jimmy's thought process is what got him there. You know? I was a little kid in school. Remember in school they asked you what you wanted to be? You know? And they say, Joey, what do you want to be? And he'd go, I want to be a fireman teacher. Johnny, what do you want to be? I want to be a police officer teacher. Jimmy, what do you want to be? I want to be a member of organized crime. I almost made it. I became a member of unorganized crime. All my guys were going in and out of the penitentiary. So I started learning what my thought process was in the 6th step. And right between the 6th step and the 7th step comes another awakening. We learn about humility. And humility is what we're going to need to stay here. Because I believe everybody that's in a Narcotics Anonymous meeting has this much gratitude. And it grows and grows as you stay here. But eventually gratitude is going to carry you to a bridge. And on the other side of that bridge is humility. And people ask me all the time, Jimmy, you know, how come he used with 15 years? How come she used with 16 years? She fell off the bridge. They fell off the bridge before he got to the other side. Because to stay here, you're going to need humility. And I thank God. My first sponsor took me to a meeting. It was pretty big, something like this. And he said, see these people in here? I said, yeah. He said, they're all going to die from it. Most of them are going to die from this disease. I said, no, they're all here. They're all right. He said, they ain't staying here. They're not staying here. And I've come to understand that. You know what he did to me? He said, get my car. And he drove me to a funeral parlor. And I said, what, they got meetings in funeral parlors? He said, no. He said, see that guy laid out up there? I said, yeah. He said, go say a prayer for him. So I went over and I said a prayer for the guy. And I came back and we walked out and I said, what was that all about? He said, that guy had 36 years clean. He died of an overdose. Man, that broke my bubble right there. I see, I earned my seat and I sit there. And when you all go out on them road trips, I welcome you back, but you ain't taking me with you. Because you ain't looking good when you come back. You're looking bad. I don't even know what they're using out there. Some kind of chemically enhanced stuff or something. You know, I was in a meeting one day, and this girl said, she said, I went in the hospital to get rid of a heroin habit. And she said, I was sitting there, and the doctor came down with all the papers in his hand and said, Miss Jones, why are you here? She said, I'm here to kick a heroin habit. He said, you ain't got an ounce of heroin in your body. So she said to the people in the rooms, what am I using then? We don't even know what. You want insanity? I'm going to give you insanity. You go into a neighborhood you don't belong in. You walk up to some guy named Big Head something, right? You give him your money, and he says, I'll be right back. That's your first commitment to prayer. He comes back, and he hands you a bag and says, death wish. And you go home and put it in your body. If that ain't insanity, I don't know any other way to explain it to you. See, in the seventh step I started using, the seventh step is me acting out. You know what? I put down gambling 6 months after I was clean. 5 months after I was clean, I stopped sleeping around. I put down smoking cigars. I used to walk around smoking a cigar and spitting tobacco at the same time. You know how we are. We can't do like one thing. You know? I mean, when I watch a movie, I got to read the paper with it, you know? I mean, just read a book, you know? It's how we are. We're all Geminis. Just born in the wrong month, that's all. I got to the eighth step. By then, I thought I was Snow White, and I took my list to my sponsor, and he said, who's Fat Ned and Fast Eddie? I said, they're drug dealers I stuck up. He said, what are you going to go down to projects and make amends to drug dealers? Imagine doing that, going down there and saying, I got to come up and make amends. Come on up, Jimmy. We want to see if you can fly. That's why you got a sponsor. I had Tom, Dick, and Harry on air. He says, Tom, Dick, and Harry, who they? I said, their husbands and wives I slept with. He said, oh, man, are you crazy or what? See, it was in the eighth step where I really learned that most of this stuff is getting on your knees and praying. The power of prayer I learned in the eighth step because of my fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh step. And in the ninth step, you only need the willingness. The willingness. That's all you need to make amends. Let me tell you something about the ninth step. If God wanted you to run around town making amends to everybody, you know, you never get anything done. Right? And what happens is, in the ninth step, usually when God puts that person in your life that you got to make amends to, he usually needs you to do something for him. My city councilman back in Baltimore, I made amends to, and I spent 2 days, two different times on the phone trying to get his daughter into treatment. It didn't work, but he thanked me, and that was one more amends made, you know? I got to the 10th step. When I get up in the morning, and my prayer is, I get on my knees and I say, God, allow me to do your will, not mine. You know? And I had a sponsee on the 10th step, and I said, well, he was on the 9th step. I said, when are you going to start working the 10th step? He said, well, I ain't made amends to this guy in Alaska. I said, Alaska? I said, God wants you to make amends to somebody in Alaska. He'll fly him down here. We got to move along in these steps. If you're a drug addict of my kind, what kind of information were you running on? You know what? When I was a little kid, the guy's 10 years older than me, nicknamed me Diamond Jim. And they told me I was the best second story man they ever met. See, they put you up in the building and they wait. They're waiting for pit bulls and Rottweilers and guns to go off. And the way this disease works is, once that happens to you, you go recruit some little guy and nickname him Pearl or something, you know, and tell him he's the best second story man you ever met. That's how we pass this disease along. We're big business. If you think I'm kidding, back in the 60s, they had one jail in our town in a place called Hagerstown. They got that tent up there now. We are a big business. A lot of people don't want us getting clean. And the 11th step, I think, is a step for people who've been around here for a long time. I think it's a step that allows us to cross that bridge I talked about, because we have to pray for the knowledge of God's will. And I have to do that every day, because I'm an addict in every way. You know? And with the 12th step for me, it's about showing up. It's showing up that them old timers, that we're carrying on this message. My first sponsor was named Buzz, and he was this little guy about this big, I don't know. So, and he terrorized me. He did. I never lied to that man, you know. And he would tell me stuff like, meet me at this meeting down here. And I would go down to the meeting, and he wouldn't be there. He did that about 10 times to me. One day I didn't go to a meeting, and he said to me, did you go to that meeting tonight? I said, no, I didn't go down there, Buzz. He said, good, because I was there. Man, talk about humility, learning humility, right? And in that 12th step, they always asked, what he told me was this. He said, Jimmy, I don't care if you want to do it or not. Just do it. Just show up. And you know what the funny thing is, when we don't want to leave that ball game or that date we're on or this or that, we're asked to do something, I might not want to do it when I walk through them doors. But when I walk out of here, I'm glad that I did that meeting. And I love Narcotics Anonymous. And what you people in these rooms showed me is what I've been going through the last year, 8 years, is really tough, man. And the first thing was that I had to go through was in 1999, God chose to take my best friend and daughter. And man, you know, when you lose a child, your life is changed forever. And Narcotics Anonymous said it is, but it's going to go on. You know, because those guys took me to a step meeting the night that she passed on. You know, and for the last 8 years, I took care of my aunt for 6.5 years, and I take care of my mother and father. It's taking 5 of my brothers and sisters to let me go away for 10 days. You know, but you people told me that I can do that. You know, and I can, one day at a time. See, this fellowship is a gift from God. What you choose to do with that gift is up to you. I choose to come back and give away what was freely given to me by you people. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, Jimmy. Now I'd like to introduce our second speaker, Trish S. from California.
Hi, I'm an addict. My name is Trish. And, God, there's just no way I can, like, follow that, okay? So if you're expecting that, please just, like, don't disappoint yourself and leave now, okay? I'm really nervous. In fact, I'm terrified. And part of that comes from... Part of that comes from the fact that I think that I'm really honored and humbled by being invited to be here to share my experience, strength, and hope with you. And I'm just an addict. You know, so if you're looking up here and you're thinking that I'm about something because I'm here, I'm not. I'm just like you, okay? I'm somebody who used until I couldn't use anymore, and then I ended up here. And I'm so grateful for that. I'm so, so grateful for that. And one of my favorite people in the world is my friend Neely. She's been my best friend for 10 years, and she's always believed in me, you know? She's always believed in me. And 2 years ago, I was leaving a job, which was the only job I'd ever had in recovery. I had it for 13.5 years. I had gone to that job loaded. I had been there for 5 months before I got clean. I was a messenger in downtown San Francisco, and I used to have this break in the middle of the day where I'd hop on our public transportation, we call it BART, and I'd go out to 16th and Mission where you could cop dope, and I'd shoot dope, I'd throw up in the gutter, I'd get back on the BART, and I'd go back to work. And through working the principles of this program, what happened for me is that my life has gotten really, really, really good. I had no education other than a high school diploma. I started as a messenger. When I left that place 2 years ago, December, after 13 and a half years, I was a director. And I don't say that except to tell you that by working the principles of this program, your life is going to get better than you ever imagined. So my friend Neely, she really believes in me. And I met her 10 years ago at a meeting at the Haight-Ashbury Free Medical Clinic. And she had come around here for the first 6 months drinking and realized that it finally said in the readings that alcohol is a drug. And so she stopped drinking. And she was a coffee maker at the 8 o'clock meeting on Sunday nights. And I told her that I would be honored to be her friend. And she had a dream. Her dream was to become a firefighter. And she worked in a bank. You know, she showed up Monday through Friday. She worked in a bank. She worked on computers. And her dream was to become a firefighter. And I told her she could do it. I believed in her. And so she worked out. She worked her butt off. She worked out. She went to school. She took all the classes. She joined the fire academy. She passed the test. And 4.5 years ago, she became a member of the Menlo Park Fire Department. And her love is urban search and rescue. Rappelling off of bridges. Rappelling off of buildings. Like, this is the person that's going to come and save your ass when the building is burning down, okay? She's supposed to be here with me. On Monday night, she got put on alert. Her urban search and rescue team was put on alert, and on Tuesday morning at 4 o'clock in the morning, they flew her out to Louisiana. And and can I just say what a miracle it is that we're out there saving people? That, you know what? Not all of us are out there looting. Not all of us are out there breaking into buildings or stealing stuff or shooting guns. You know, some of us are actually out there saving lives. And that is the power of Narcotics Anonymous and believing in someone. I got clean on September 28th, 1990. I got clean because I couldn't do it anymore. I had tried and tried and tried. And, you know, and what I tried to do, actually, is I had tried to do it my way. You know, I had tried to do it by, you know, moving cities, changing jobs, changing friends, changing drugs. You know, I had tried to do it my way. And when I got to Narcotics Anonymous, what happened was that as a result of it never working my way, I decided to try it your way. You know, I decided to try the suggestions that you guys had given me. And so what I did is I went to meetings, I got a sponsor, I started working the steps, I prayed to higher power, and I became of service. And those five things are my foundation. That's what keeps me clean. And I have really bad cotton, though. And because I'm so nervous. So I'm just, God is going to take this and it's going to be okay. I'm sure of that. So when I got clean, I had a job. I was married. I'd done what all good addicts do. I found a great co, and I married him. And because he wasn't getting away, and he took care of me. You know, he took care of me. He kept a roof over my head. He fed me. He kept me clothed. And as a result of that, I got to spend all my energy chasing dope. You know, and that was a good thing. Because I think that in some ways it probably brought me here really, really quickly. And actually, you know, the first person who believed in me was this crazy psycho guy called Fritz, who used to go to meetings in San Francisco. And I hung out in Haight-Ashbury. I actually lived on Haight and Cole. And I remember I was dope sick one day. I was sitting in the gutter. And Fritz walked up to me. And you know, he was one of these guys who was in and out and in and out and in and out. And it didn't matter because he was back and in and out. And you know what? It was okay. It's okay. Those people are okay to be here. And we should welcome them and believe in them. Because you never know when one of them is going to walk up to somebody and say, you know what, you should try a meeting of NA, which is what happened to me. You know, that psycho crazy guy, like, said, you know, you could really try Narcotics Anonymous. It might work for you. You know, and here I am, 14 years, 11 months, and 5 days later, and I haven't left. And you know that moment of silence that we have at the end of the meeting for the addict who still suffers? That's because we believe. Because we have hope. Hope is powerful. It is a powerful thing. So anyway, I left my husband, and I took two suitcases. I left a marriage after 5 years. I had tried to get clean. I came back to the house, and he had dope in the house, and I knew that I couldn't stay there or I was going to die. And so I took my two little suitcases, and I moved into a halfway house for women with 14 women and two bathrooms. And I remember the two bathrooms distinctly. And I had been on my own since I was 15. I'm one of seven kids. And I left home early because it was chaos. And, you know, and all of a sudden I, like, had all these rules. I had to be home by a certain time. My bed had to be made. You know, all this stuff. And it was like, it's okay. It's okay. I can do this. And, you know, what's interesting is that while Jimmy alluded to this, that while there are a ton of people who believe in you here in Narcotics Anonymous, there are people out there who believe in you, too. And some of those people include professionals who, God bless them, I could never do it. Okay, I tried. But those professionals who work in the field of helping addicts to recover. You know, I had tried and tried and tried for years before I ever got clean, for 5 years. And these people never stopped believing in me. They never stopped believing that it was possible for me to get clean. And that was just, like, really powerful for me. You know, because I was the kind of addict that I was so ashamed of my behavior that I hadn't called my family in 3 years. I didn't want to talk to them. I wasn't the one who was always going back begging for money. Hell no, I was ashamed. I didn't want them to see me with scars and tracks. And, you know, I didn't want that to happen. So I just didn't call. So in the end, these were the only people who said, you can do this. And of course, those were the people that pointed me to Narcotics Anonymous. I go back there around my anniversary just to say thank you. Because you know what? The truth is that we don't all make it. And it's rare. So I think it's really important for them to know that I'm grateful. And that's cool. I like doing that. God, it got really quiet in here, didn't it? Okay, so I'm not going to say anything profound either, so you can get up and go out if you're waiting for that as well, okay? I got a sponsor and I started working steps right away. And I have to say that the steps are freedom. The steps have allowed me to be inside my own skin and not want to kill myself or you most of the time. Most of the time. Because there are moments, you know. And I work the steps now not because of the pain I'm in, but because I want to be the best person my higher power wants me to be. Okay, so recovery has been a ride. That's like the best way to put it, is that recovery has been such an incredible ride. So, you know, I started working steps right away at 5 months clean. A meeting that I was a home group member of waived clean time. I became a group service representative and I went to area and I found my place. My people. And I've never left. I have never left service. I want to say that the people who are putting this convention on have worked their asses off. And thank you. And it would really be cool if you walked by and you saw somebody being of service and you thanked them personally. Because it's hard work. It's really hard work, and we're not easy people to please. Currently, I'm on a convention committee, and it's hard work, and we're not easy people to please. So I love being of service, and I have to say that being of service is my spiritual foundation. It's my connection to God that gets me out of the way so that I can move my ego away and let God come in. And by letting God come in, what that does, because I'm a control freak, which is why I'm really good in service, and by letting ego go out and God come in, what happens is that it's God's will, not my will. And that is really an important place for me to be in. The Green and Gold book says humility is the perfect place for an addict, and I have to agree with that. This last time that I worked the steps, I worked through the Green and Gold book, the workbook, and I worked it with a sponsor. And what happened is that I had the most profound experience working the steps, because what happened this time around is that I finally got that it's okay to be human. I finally got that I didn't have to be perfect at this. I finally got that the steps are what allow me to be human, because I can make mistakes, I can inventory it, I can find out what my part is, I can write down who I need to make an amends to, I can talk to my sponsor, and I can clean it up. And then I can invite a loving, caring God into my life to help me not do it again. But because I'm human, I make mistakes. And I hurt people. And I was just going to say that I don't ever do it on purpose, but that would be a lie. I rarely hurt people on purpose. My husband is the one who suffers from the on-purpose point the most. And the reason why that is because I feel safest with him. Because I know that he loves me. And I know that he has seen the darkest side of me. And that no matter what, he loves me. And that's pretty powerful. So I've had sponsors. I've had three sponsors in recovery, and every single sponsor has taught me something of what I needed to learn. And every single sponsor has loved me. And I believe that what our job is here is to love people unconditionally, no matter what. Because people out there, I mean, we trash each other out there. You know, we do not, let's just say that we're not real nurturing out there. Which is why when we come in here as broken people, it's really important just to love people and to let them make mistakes. You know, the new, well, I shouldn't say that. Okay, so, when I was first new around here, I'm going to say it. Okay, so when I was first new around here, I was grateful that men slept with newcomers because they slept with me. And I had no self-esteem, okay? So the only esteem that I had was my sexuality. And because of that, I stuck around. I felt wanted. And what happened was, is through sticking around, I stuck around long enough to hear that I was more than just what was between my legs. But I am that too. Because the gift today is to be a whole person. But what was really, and I have to say, this was just my experience, you know. What happened was, is that I met a guy, and he didn't want to sleep with me. And I thought, what's wrong with me? Why don't you want to sleep with me? Don't you believe in me? He's like, yeah, I believe in you much more than you even know. And this guy, he became my friend, and we hung out, and he was great. He was really, really great. He taught me how to look inside my heart and to understand that the generous, loving person I am in here is who God wants me to be. Because ask any of my friends and they'll tell you that that's who I am. And I, you know, I used to be so embarrassed about that when I was out on the street. Because the truth was is that that was a weakness. You didn't want anybody to see how loving, caring, and generous you were. Because they take advantage of you. And now I finally am okay with that. Okay with being the person that I am today. And that's a gift. And that's from the process of working the steps, because it's allowed me to be inside my own skin and be comfortable. And I'm really, really grateful for the steps. And if you haven't worked them, do. As Bob Berg used to say, just work the steps or die, blank, blank. So it's been a hell of a ride. Okay, so 2 years ago, I left a job. It was the only job I'd ever had in recovery. It was all I knew. I was sure that the only reason that they wanted me there was not because of how talented and how skilled I was, but because they'd had me for so long. And I was terrified of leaving the job because I thought that I will never ever get a job. And you can insert any blank in there that you want, okay? I will never ever get a man. I will never ever get a friend. I will never ever get a job. as good as that again. And so my fear was based on not trusting that God was going to take care of me. My fear was based on my head. My fear was based on yesterday. My fear was based on all those old tapes inside my head that said I was never going to be good enough. And what happened was, and you know, this job was phenomenal. I had an office up on the 18th floor overlooking the financial district in the San Francisco financial district, seeing the ocean. I had a lot of money, yada, yada, yada. And the truth was, is I was miserable. I was going to work, and at least once a week, sometimes more, I would close my office door and I would break down into sobs because I hated what I was doing. And I had to get out. But it was a process for me. I prayed. I talked to people. I talked to my sponsor. And my best friend, she believed in me. She said, it's okay. You can do it. And I need to say that for 8 years prior to that, I was going to school. I was working full time and I was going to school. I was taking two classes every semester and it was painfully slow. But last May, I graduated with a Bachelor of Science. And a minor in philosophy and religion. So if you want to talk shit, we can do that afterwards. And so I asked for a package. I asked to be laid off. They laid me off. I left the job. I was terrified, but I knew that God didn't want me to be unhappy. I knew that my higher power's will for me was not to go and cry and sob and break down. And what happened was, and let me just back up a little bit. You know, I grew up in a family. My parents got divorced when I was very young. My mom is very liberal. She works in the child care industry. My dad is very conservative, and he works in the aerospace industry. Like, my dad is, like, whatever. Anyway, I was scared of my dad growing up because he drank a lot and he used to come home and he hit us. You know, so growing up, I was always afraid of my dad. And when I got clean, I started to have a relationship with my dad. And what happened was, is that I had never, ever felt like my dad approved of me until I got this job that I was about to leave. And so through the principles of the program and through attempting to have a relationship with my father, what happened was is I was talking to him on a regular basis. And I called him and I said, Dad, I'm miserable. I need to get out of here and I don't know what to do. And he said, you know what? Life is too short. You need to leave. And it's okay because I believe in you and it's going to be all right. And I was just like, oh, my God. It was like a miracle, okay? Just a miracle. And for some reason, and this was a little kid in me, it was like that gave me permission to finally close the door on that decision, you know? So I went to school full time. I graduated last May. I had never gone to school full time. It was such a pleasure. And then because I got this package for leaving my job, I took the money and I went to Europe and I went for 7 weeks. And I went alone. You know, because I knew that I could go to meetings of Narcotics Anonymous every place that I went, and there would be somebody there who believed in me. So I came home, then I had to find a job, because the money was running out, and I didn't know what to do, And all of a sudden, I went to some job fairs and yada yada, and I turned in a resume, and this woman said, "Hey, have you done such and such?" And I said, "Yeah, actually I have." And she said, "You know, you should really put that on your resume because it's really hot right now." And I said, "Really?" I said, "Okay." So I put it on my resume, and I have worked ever since. And the job that I have today is I work for myself. I set my own hours. I set my own vacation time. I do as much as I want. And I used to think that if I was doing that, that if I didn't like the client I worked for, I could just leave. But you know what? The principles of this program have taught me differently. Because once I make a commitment, I can't just get up and walk out. Sorry, I just can't. And I just finished a job with a client that I didn't like very much. And I was there for 6 months. I went home on the weekends. But there were great meetings in the area that I was in. And so I always felt like there was somebody there. And that was a big gift. So, yeah. So I work for myself. It's pretty cool. And talk about trusting in God. You know, now I really have to trust in God. I really have to have faith that I'm going to be taken care of, that the cash is going to keep coming in, that the cash flow is still going to happen, and I have to show up. I really have to show up. It's not like I don't have any sick time anymore. You know? So, broken eyelash or not, you didn't think I was listening, did you? So, I just want to talk really briefly about the person who probably believes in me most, other than my sponsor, and that would be my husband. 8 years ago, actually 10 years ago, he was doing time in the Susanville State Penitentiary in California with my brother. And I like convicts. Ask my friends, they'll tell you. My brother was getting clean, and I was sending him literature, and I was visiting him on a regular basis, and I had just come through another shitty relationship. And what finally happened in that shitty relationship is, for the first time, I was like, "What do you mean you don't want to be with me? I'm pretty cool. If you don't want to be with me, then you need to go." Yeah, because you know what? God has something better for me, and I just need to open myself up to that. But I can't do that if you're still here taking up this space. So you got to go. And he did. And then what happened is that my brother introduced me to Brian. And Brian lived in a different area than I did. He was in Narcotics Anonymous. He's a member. And he lived an hour away from where I live. And so I had him meet me at the biggest meeting that we have in San Francisco. It was at Post and Mason. There were like 300 people there, because I figured that if I met him and that if he was a dog, I could ditch him, because I'm just not that spiritual, okay? And he wasn't. But, you know, I have to say that there weren't any big fireworks going off. It wasn't like, "Ooh, baby, you're the one." And we became friends, and we went out to dinner afterwards, and then he went back to Napa. And then what happened is that we created this relationship over the phone, right? We were talking every night, and I fell in love with Brian over the phone. And if God gives me a gift, I really need to be aware that the wrapping is not the gift. Okay, so let me just say that Brian is 5'5", he's bald, and he's like a little overweight. Like literally just a little bit. And he's got that cute little, you know, whatever. Anyway, so So I had always imagined that, you know, Mr. Wright was going to be tall, dark, and handsome, whatever. And here was Brian, who was shorter than me. But I would talk to him on the phone, and, you know, he was very involved in service. He had a sponsor. He was working steps. He sponsored people. He was going to meetings. He, not only that, but he was doing community service. He was answering the suicide hotline once a week. He would give up a night of sleep for that. I don't know about you, but my sleep is really important. So that was big for me, you know? And so I fell in love with him over the phone. And we started dating, and we didn't move in together until after 9 months. Which for me was a miracle, because the other relationship that I had where we moved in, we met, we fell in love, we had dinner, he spent the night, he moved in, and it happened in 2 weeks. You know, and 9 months after Brian moved in, we decided that we wanted to be together, and we made a commitment, and we bought a house together. And you know, a commitment between you and that other person and the bank for 30 years is a pretty frickin' big commitment, if you ask me. And then what happened is after 9/11, you know, I decided that I wanted to be married. Because the real reason was because I saw these people who had been domestic partners and they couldn't take care of each other because of the law. And I thought, I don't want that ever to happen to us, you know. And so, plus I wanted to have a big-ass party. Really, that was kind of even more, but and we did. We had, okay, so can I just say I had the fairy tale wedding? I got married at the Palace of Fine Arts in the best dress in my fantasy head that I wanted. I had 200 people there, some of which are in this room now. Thank you. The next day, I had another wedding, which was a pagan celebration, because that's my spirituality. And it was a hand fasting, and that was fabulous. I had a great time. So over the weekend, I had like 350 people who I knew and loved me there at that. And Brian. Oh, yeah, that's right. And Brian. And that was just, it was fabulous. It was just fabulous. And you know what? I'd always wanted that. How awesome to be able to believe enough in myself to be able to do that. And so in October, we'll have been married for 3 years. We'll have been together for 8. And this man loves me so much that he lets me be who I am. And what that means is that deepest, darkest, ugliest stuff, he's okay with. And it also means that he's the person that I make amends to most. Because I feel safest with him. He's the one that stuff kind of squeezes out and goes and gets, you know, yucky. And then I have to go and pull it back and say I'm sorry. But I'm really, really grateful for him. We've had a hard year. You know, when I had a year, you know, I don't know if they told you this or not, but, and it was actually in a movie I saw recently, but when I first got clean, they said, you know, you don't get to get into a relationship right away. You get a plant, you keep it for a year if it's still alive, you get a pet, another year if it's still alive, then you can get into a relationship. Of course, I ignored that advice, but I got a pet when I had about a year clean. She was a kitty. And she was about a year old. Her name was Stinky. She was an SPCA rescue cat, and, you know, she didn't really, you know. Anyway, so this cat was the oldest continuous relationship that I had since I'd been clean, and this year she passed away. And 2 days after that, Brian's sponsor passed away. And he was an elder in this fellowship. He had 28 years clean, and So it's been a really hard, that happened in the 11th of July and the 13th of July, and it's been a really hard year for us. And so we've just been kind of holding on to each other and letting the fellowship hold us in San Francisco as well. And it's okay. Because you know what? Death is part of life. It happens. So I guess if I want to sum it up, like, what I really want to say is that I believe that anybody here can come in off the street, and if they have the willingness to get clean and stay clean, that they can do it here in Narcotics Anonymous. It's been my obligation to show up for them and to help them in any way that I can. I don't get to choose who's willing and who's not. It's none of my business. That's all God stuff. I just have to act as if anybody has that willingness. So with that, I just want to say that I really appreciate being asked to share, and thank you for believing in me, and thank you for letting me believe in you. Let's thank Jimmy and Trish for speaking. And Shane has been asked to read "We Do Recover."
I'm Shane, I'm an addict. We do recover. When at the end of the road we find that we can no longer function as a human being, either with or without drugs, we all face the same dilemma. What is there left to do? There seems to be this alternative. Either go on as best we can to the bitter ends, jails, institutions, or death, or find a new way to live. In years gone by, very few addicts ever had this last choice. Those who are addicted today are more fortunate. For the first time in man's entire history, a simple way has been proving itself in the lives of many addicts. It is available to us all. This is a simple, spiritual, not religious program known as Narcotics Anonymous.
And now if we can all make a circle around the room and close the meeting with the third step prayer.